Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 83. I'm recording it on Monday, January 26th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music you're listening to is by Kevin McLeod. He is at, I pulled this down from his website, Incompetech.com. And the title of this selection is Monster Promenade. I couldn't help pulling that one down because I've told you before how I think of myself as a hobbit trying to get the one ring that would bind them all to Mount Doom and to drop it into that fire. And the one ring is passive investing. The horrible idea that has destroyed so many lives in recent decades and is destroying even more as we speak. And I'm just a little hobbit, you know, and I'm I like my glass of beer and whatever it is, two breakfasts every day. I like my two breakfasts every day. But I've got these orcs, you know, I turn one way and I see the orcs, and I turn another way and there's that big red eye, and I turn another way and there's what are those things on the Black Riders. Got the Black Riders. We got everywhere you turn. We got goons to the left. We got experts to the right. And I'm stuck in the middle with you. All right. The title of this podcast is Jeremy Grantham Tells the Truth Straight, No Chaser, About Stock Investing. There was a column that came out by Jeremy Grantham. I think it's a monthly letter he writes at his website. Jeremy Grantham is a top-notch investing guy. He's one of the few experts who understands the ABCs of investing, who understands that valuations really do affect long-term returns. It's not just a rumor. That the 30 years of academic research that we have showing that might be something to it after 30 years. You might want to check that out. Might want to take that into consideration when developing your investing strategies. Jeremy, he writes for it's GMO.com is his website. And he writes a quarterly letter there. And this is the quarterly letter for January 2009. And the title of his letter is, I don't know if I can get you to this. I'll try to read it. It's www.gmo.com/website-content/JG, capital L, letter, like letter. Then there's a space, and then it's 4Q08.pdf. And so that might be a little hard to find, but maybe if you plug in Jeremy Grantham and you'll be able to get the site, and then you'll be able to find the quarterly letter. If you go to the GMO.com website, I bet you'll be able to find it. He must have the quarterly letters organized together. And the title of this one is, this is the quarterly letter for January 2009. And the title is Obama and the Teflon Man and Other Short Stories, Part 1. I didn't notice that, Part 1. Hopefully there's going to be a Part 2, because this is wonderful, wonderful stuff. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's lengthy, but there's part of it where Jeremy does exactly what we need to have the experts start doing. And Jeremy has been doing this for some time. It's not fair to say that he is only now starting to tell the truth about stock investing. He's been doing that for years. Jeremy Grantham is I should mention him. When I mention all those people who have been advocating rational investing for some time, I mention Robert Shiller and John Walter Russell and Ed Easterling and John Malden and Cliff S. Ness and Rob Arnott and Andrew Smithers. I should be mentioning Jeremy Grantham as well. He's another one who's been telling the straight story, not the passive investing story, for a good amount of time now. I'm going to read from a section of this letter that focuses on the most important point. What's important about Jeremy's column is, and as I say, all his writings, but this one, of course, is stronger because the situation is stronger, but what we are getting, and I'm seeing this more and more all the time, it's very exciting. It's easy to get depressed. People have lost so much money. You know, we all were hoping to retire, and our retirements have been pushed back 5 years, 10 years. And that's depressing as all get out. You know, that's just sad can be. But it what we are seeing is that more and more of the quote-unquote experts are coming forward with what we have learned in the past 30 years. You see, back in the 60s, the efficient market theory was developed. We thought we had learned it all. We thought we would never again have to question our investing ideas. We knew everything there was to know. And that turned out to be false. And in the 1980s, we started to learn something new, that the efficient market theory was false. But we've continued to push the efficient market theory and passive investing on people. We've continued to tell people, no. You know, ignore your common sense, ignore the academic research. Just go with this emotional idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices get to insane levels. That's been the last 30 years, and that idea has been getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And a lot of the experts who push it have been trying to hang on more and more and more desperately to this failed approach. And now that we've had this big stock crash, what's happening is a lot of the investors, see, what a lot of the experts have been saying is, well, you know, we can't really explore these new ideas because investors will get mad at us. We've been telling them this for 30 years, and if we tell them it's wrong, you know, it's going to sound like we're not experts, you know. It's not going to sound right. But now that people have seen their retirements failing and being pushed off far into the future, they're saying, wait a minute. You know, maybe this emotional approach isn't the best idea in the world. Maybe we should start to, you know, look a little more seriously at these investing questions. Tell a little more of the full story. So we're getting a lot of this. And I report on it when I see it. And this is a good example. And Jeremy Grantham, he's a good person to turn to because he's been following it for years now. I've been following it for 7 years, but Jeremy, I think, goes back before me. I don't know his whole history, but I believe he's been following this the realistic side of investing much longer than Rob Bennett. So he's in a good position to comment on how this happened. You know, why do these terrible things keep happening to us? You know, why did this happen? And so I'm going to read a little bit from his letter, and that's why I say this is the truth about stock investing told straight with no chaser. And what we get a lot from the passive investing advocates, the best of them anyway, you know, Bill Bernstein and Jonathan Clements and John Bogle, the best of the passive investing advocates, they do hint at the realities. If you read between the lines and you study what they put out, you can sort of figure out that passive investing could never work in the real world. But they're reluctant to come out too strong. But Jeremy lays it on the line. This is the truth about stock investing told straight, no chaser. The story, part one of his letter, the story so far, he says, greed plus incompetence plus a belief in market efficiency equals disaster. You know, I'm going to read what he says. I think that the title is, it's not unfair. It's a little harsh by my taste. I would just have said a belief in market efficiency equals disaster. That part I agree with 100%. That's the message that needs to be told. Greed is there, but I think greed is actually overdone. I don't think greed is as big a factor as some people make it out to be. So I wouldn't have included that element, but I can't say it's wrong. And incompetence, I don't know. You know, I wouldn't call it incompetence. I think people made mistakes, and you know, whenever somebody makes a mistake, you can call it incompetence if you want to be harsh. But mistakes are mistakes, and all humans make mistakes. I can make mistakes. I've made mistakes, and you know, I don't want to say I could make mistakes. I have made mistakes, and you know, I don't know. I don't think I don't get the feeling that the people who have pushed passive investing are incompetent. I frankly don't agree. But I can see why some people would say it, given the results we've seen. I see it more as an emotional reluctance to exploring the realities. Now, you know, maybe that translates into incompetence if you reduce it to one word, but the way I say it, here's how I say it. I say that none of us are experts. You see, that's a different way of saying the same thing. I'm not saying they're incompetent. I'm saying our knowledge is not sufficiently advanced today that anyone should be calling themselves an investing expert. It's sort of presumptuous to say you're an investing expert while you're promoting passive investing, the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. No. I can't swallow the idea that someone pushing passive investing is a true expert. But I would not say they're incompetent. They're in training. They're learning. They know the book stuff. They're very smart people. They're good people. They're not incompetent. But maybe they're emotionally incompetent. They don't understand the emotional side of investing. If you don't understand valuations and its effect on returns, you don't understand the emotional side of investing. Valuations are emotions. That's what causes overvaluation and undervaluation. So they are incompetent on one side of the investing equation, but on the other side, they're highly competent. So, you know, to me, it's too much of a simplification to say greed plus incompetence. But belief in market efficiency equals disaster? Yes, 100 times yes. So I think it's a wonderful letter that Jeremy Grantham has provided us. I'm going to read part one of his letter. This is Jeremy Grantham speaking, not Rob Bennett. Greed and reckless overconfidence on the part of almost everyone caused us to ignore risk to a degree that is probably unparalleled in breadth and depth in American history. I absolutely agree. I'm going to do a podcast on why it was so bad this time. Why did overvaluation go to levels never seen before, and why did it cause us pain never seen before? So that he's raising an important question there. Back to Jeremy. Even more remarkable was the lack of insight and basic competence of our leadership. I see. He's saying that it's the leadership that's incompetent, and in a way, yes. I still think it's a little harsh, but the idea of leaders is to lead. That part is fair, and they've led us down a very dark path, and they haven't admitted their errors. They haven't admitted their mistakes. They don't have the grace yet to admit where they went wrong, or where they think they went wrong, or where maybe they went wrong. They haven't even had the grace. Most of them have not had the grace yet to acknowledge that they're capable of being wrong. So, I don't know. I'll think about it. I'll think about whether I feel that strongly about it or not. Even more remarkable was the lack of insight and basic competence of our leadership, which led them to ignore this development, or worse, to encourage it. Amen. 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 The problem with the experts is not just that they're wrong, but they encourage us in our worst instincts. Back to Grantham. Ingenious new financial instruments certainly facilitated and exaggerated these weaknesses. But they were not the most potent ingredient in our toxic stew. That honor goes to an economic establishment for building over many decades a belief in rational expectations. This is the real thing, friends and neighbors. Reasonable, economically induced behavior that would always guarantee approximately efficient markets. We should laugh at the idea that the market is efficient. We should laugh sardonically at that idea after the human misery it has caused. That insane belief that the markets are efficient. In their desire for mathematical order and elegant models, the economic establishment played down the inconveniently large role of bad behavior, career risk management, and flat-out burst of irrationality. Good sentence. The dominant economic theorists so valued orderliness and rationality that they actually grew to believe it. And I think that's right. They do believe it. They've got cognitive dissonance. They believe this crazy stuff. And this false conviction became increasingly dangerous. It was why Greenspan and Bernanke were not sure that bubbles, outbursts of serious irrationality, could even exist. They were not sure that bubbles could even exist. This is why I say, today we don't understand the ABCs of stock investing. Forget the advanced stuff. We don't have the basics yet. And he's right. They didn't believe that bubbles could exist. That's true. It was why, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. It was why, is it Bernanke or Bernanke? I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm sorry. It was why Bernanke, who had studied the bubble of 1929, could still not see it as proof of irrationality and could still view the Depression, a la Milton Friedman, as a mere consequence of incredibly bad, easily avoidable policy measures. Of more recent importance, it was why Bernanke could dismiss a dangerous 100-year bubble in U.S. housing as being non-existent. It was why Hyman Minsky was marginalized as an economist, despite his brilliant insight of the, quote, near inevitability of periodic financial crises. It was why the suggestion in academic circles of stock market inefficiencies, let alone major dysfunctionality, was considered a heresy. Sound familiar? It was why Burton Malkiel could rationalize the 1987 crash as being an efficient response to 12 or so triggers. These triggers, however, had a trivial weakness. Seasoned portfolio managers at the time had never even heard of most of them. Never underestimate the power of a dominant academic idea to choke off competing ideas. And never underestimate the willingness of academics to change their views in the face of evidence. Like Linda Ronstadt did, I'm going to say it again. Never underestimate the power of a dominant academic idea to choke off competing ideas. And never underestimate the unwillingness of academics to change their views in the face of evidence. They have decades of their research and their academic standing to defend. The incredibly inaccurate efficient market theory was believed in totality by many of our financial leaders and believed in part by almost all. It left our economic and governmental establishment sitting by confidently, even as a lethally dangerous combination of asset bubbles, lax controls, pernicious incentives, and wickedly complicated instruments led to our current plight. Surely, none of this could happen in a rational, efficient world, they seemed to be thinking. And the absolutely worst aspect of this belief set was that it led to a chronic underestimation of the dangers of asset bubbles breaking. The very severe loss of perceived wealth and the standard debt that comes with a savage write-down of assets. Well, it's nice to get that off my chest once again. Boy, that man is on fire. And if you're smart and you want to invest effectively in the future, you'll go to that website, gmo.com, and check out that letter and check out earlier letters. As Jeremy suggests there, this isn't new with him. He's been telling the truth about stock investing for a long time. And, you know, it gets to the point where you get tired of hearing yourself say it. He's making a joke at his own expense there. He's saying, glad to get that off my chest again. I don't know how many years he's been saying it, but it goes back a long time. I've read a lot of his letters, and, you know, you can learn everything you need to know about stock investing by reading Jeremy Grantham's letters. It's not complicated. It's not hard. But you have to hear it before you'll understand it. And you're not going to hear it by people advocating passive investing. All right, that was great stuff. And you see, the point I do want to make is that this is what we need to hear. At the site, these podcasts go up quite a bit after the time I record them, only because I've been recording so many in the wake of the price crash that I put out three a week, and I think that's the most people could possibly handle. And I'd like to get it down to one a week at some point, but I just couldn't do the job with one a week, given how quickly developments are popping. So I do three a week, and I'm about, 6 weeks behind. So the one that I have up today is time is not a four-letter word. And I make the point in that podcast that the people who understand the realities of investing need to stop being so darn apologetic about it. I don't mean Jeremy Grantham. It sounds like he's, and I think it's true. I've read some of his stuff. He's been giving us the real story for a long time. But there are, in the retire early and indexing discussion board communities, we've had hundreds and hundreds of people come forward who are so much better informed than the experts. And, they put forward their ideas in these tentative ways. It's like, John Bogle, he's the smartest man that ever lived, and everything he says is perfect, and it's impossible he could ever get anything even a little bit wrong. But I had an idea pass through my head, and I think I was half asleep. I probably didn't know what I was thinking. I was drinking that night, and I was probably, very foggy, and the thought occurred to me just for a second. It wasn't long, but just for a second, I thought, well, maybe you should change your allocation when prices are at insanely dangerous levels. Maybe you should try to hold on to some of your retirement money, lower your allocation a little bit. But as soon as I thought it, I knew it was wrong. I knew that I was all messed up. So please correct me, please, because I don't want to give dangerous advice. I don't want to mislead people. I don't want to crush people. And it can't be right. I mean, John Bogle favors passive investing. So I who am I? I must be wrong. But I had that thought. I just wanted to, I had that thought, but please. I know I'm wrong. Go back to your regular discussions. Please understand. I know that I'm wrong. That's not the way to get the job done. People hear that, and they conclude. They go with their emotions. They say, hey, all my emotions are telling me to listen to passive investing. And this guy is saying no, but he's telling us he's an idiot. He's telling us he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm going to stick with what my emotions tell me. My emotions are saying, hey, get rich quick, man. Throw the dice. Maybe he needs a new pair of shoes. Passive investing's the way to go. I stopped that. I used to do it in that tentative, babyish way. And I saw how many people were being hurt by it. And I, of course, became more and more convinced that there really is no one who can offer a rational defense of passive investing. Jeremy Grantham, he doesn't use those words, but he makes the same message. He says this terrible idea. It's not just a bad idea. It's a truly terrible, mindless idea. It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to all humans that there was a time when serious, smart people believed this nonsense. But he also points to the reason why 30 years of research going the other way has not been enough to persuade us to give up this gibberish. There are a lot of people whose careers, they feel, are on the line. They've been putting out studies for, going back more than 30 years, going back 50 years. And to acknowledge now that they were wrong, it's beyond their imagination to say such a thing. But I think they have to, because once you say you're wrong, the pain's over. I wish they had said they were wrong before the stock crash, to be sure. But, it is what it is. I mean, we can't go back in time. But once you say you're wrong, you go forward. Things get better. And of course, most of these people are very smart people, and they can do great work. And all of the ones I know of, I haven't studied everybody, but all the ones I know of have made fantastic contributions over the years. So if it were me, I would come out and I'd say, look, I was totally wrong about passive investing. That was knuckleheaded, and I don't know what I was thinking. And I'm sorry, but I hope you'll forgive me. And here are some things I think I did that, really are valid contributions, and I hope you'll take that into consideration when assessing my overall record. And all I can say is that I certainly will, and I will advocate that others do so. And I don't think hanging people by a tree is the way to go. And we need these people helping us, but we do have to get this passive investing monster behind us. That is urgent business. It's, you know, we're hurting ourselves big time. All right. So I want to read a little bit from the Bogleheads.org thread where I saw this link. And the thread was started by Petroselli. Good job. Good job. Petroselli does not agree with my investing views, but one thing I'll say about Petroselli I really like. He agrees with my views on trying to have a sense of humor. I think he's probably the funniest poster at bogleheads.org. That's the best sense of humor. And does that board community ever need a sense of humor? There, of course, have been people there who have demanded his removal, demanded a banning of Petroselli. Sometimes tells the truth about stock investing. Horrors, horrors. Oh, get rid of this guy. Remove him. But I like the guy. He's put up some posts that were... He's not perfect. He's put up some nasty stuff. But in percentage terms, the nasty stuff is a small percentage of what he puts up. Most of his stuff is either intelligent, as this one is, or funny, which, you know, we need. So it adds to the mix. And the title of the thread is... The thread was put up Saturday, January 24th, and the title is Greed Plus Incompetence Plus Belief in Market Efficiency Equals Disaster. Now, I will make one quick comment. Petroselli basically just linked, you know, gave a short description of what the article was about. But then he puts his own comment at the bottom, and his comment is, food for thought, ... Well, that I don't agree with. I mean, I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to put up this thread without causing World War III. So I fully understand why he wrote it the way he did. But it's not food for thought. This article by Jeremy Grantham is not food for thought. It's food for action. The time for thought, you know, it was 18 years ago when Shiller first put out his first study showing that valuations affect long-term return. Then it was food for thought. Maybe 15 years ago, it was food for thought. Not in January of 2009. It's not food for thought. It's food for action. What we need today is action. You know, there was an announcement. Mel Lindauer had an announcement about the next meeting, the next annual meeting of the, I don't know what they call themselves now. They used to be the Vanguard Diehards. I presume they're now the Bogleheads. But whatever they are, they've announced the meeting, and John Bogle will be attending. Well, it would seem to me that it would be a good idea if John Bogle were asked some questions about what Jeremy Grantham says here. Jeremy Grantham is saying that passive investing is dangerous nonsense, and there's 30 years of academic research showing that to be the case. It would seem to me that it would be a good idea if John Bogle would address himself to this claim. And it would be a good idea if some people in the audience would ask some tough follow-up questions so that we will find out what Bogle really thinks. And if Bogle doesn't know, if Bogle is confused, that's news. You know, that's an acceptable answer to say, I got to tell you, Petroselli, great question, but I don't know. It's beyond me. I thought passive investing worked, and it's not working so hot. And I got to tell you, I encourage your discussion board community to maybe, you know, open up to some different ideas, because I need to learn. I need to go back to the basics, learn how this works. That would be, you know, that's fine. That's a good answer. But we need some kind of answer. We don't need Bogle giving another speech where he tells us, your money will be back in 30 years. Just stick with that same allocation. Don't change. Stay the course. Timing doesn't work. You know, the magical incantations aren't doing the job. So, you know, let's put that sort of thing behind us. It's not food for thought. It's food for action. That's why I use the phrase straight, no chaser. Jeremy Grantham is you know, he's not saying think about this. He's saying please fix. Please fix. There's a guy, Jack, and he quotes something from Grantham. He says, this is a quote from Grantham. I don't think this is from the part of the letter I read, but it says, this is a quote from Grantham. Remember that although your portfolio is down 40%, just as you own the same house, you still control the same number of shares, and hence the same fraction of long-term wealth that you had before. You simply overestimated your wealth before. And Jack's comment on those words is, except for those who have bailed out using Plan B and those who have gone 100% because stocks are cheap. Now, you may not understand what's going on there, but I think I do. The quote from Grantham that Jack is putting forward is a quote that supports Bogle's ideas, Bogle's rational ideas, not his passive investing ideas. Bogle, you know, for the benefit of people who haven't listened to the other podcast, Bogle is 60% rational, 40% passive. His name is associated with passive investing, but Bogle is the godfather of the rational investing model, which is the alternative to the passive investing model. Bogle is a leader in both camps. His statements are completely contradictory. But he's a big-time proponent of rational investing. Bogle understands that valuations affect long-term returns. I learned that from reading John Bogle. But he's also a big proponent of passive investing, the emotional approach that says there's no need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. So Bogle's in both camps. And Jack, I think it would be fair to say, is trying to defend Bogle. He read the section that I read from Grantham, and obviously that's a criticism of passive investing. It's saying that this idea is a disaster. But then Jack is saying, wait a minute, this other sentence from Grantham is supportive of Bogle's ideas. And it is. And the statement is right on. Grantham's statement that even though your portfolio is down 40%, just as you own the same house, you still control the same number of shares and hence the same fraction of long-term wealth that you had before. You simply overestimated your wealth before. That's 100% correct. That's exactly what people need to hear. If we're going to restore confidence in the markets, that's what we need to tell people. What a lot of people are getting from the passive investing advocates today is this fantasy stuff. Oh, maybe you'll get your money back. Maybe we'll go back to insane valuations. Could happen. See, that's sick to lead people on that way. The proper thing to tell people is nothing has happened. Stocks are at fair value today. There's nothing wrong with the stock market. There's nothing wrong with stocks. What's wrong is that we irresponsibly bid up prices to 3 times fair value, and now they have fallen back to fair value. That's why we've had a 60% drop in stock prices since January of 2008. What did you think was going to happen? We need to tell people that so that people understand the system hasn't broken down. The system's working just the way it's supposed to work, the only way it possibly could work. It's the people advocating passive investing who've made the mistake, who are in the wrong, not the stocks, not the system. It's passive investing that is the problem. It's this fantasy land stuff that you don't need to change your stock allocation. You simply overestimated your wealth before. That's what happened. The passive investors were telling us, we were getting portfolio statements telling us we had $100,000 in our portfolio and we had $35,000 of real wealth and $65,000 of cotton candy nonsense. And the $65,000 is now gone and it hurts. But if they had told us all along that it was cotton candy nonsense, it wouldn't hurt. We never would have been led to believe such falsehoods. So Grantham's statement is fine. But Jack is using it as a defense. And he's saying, except for those who bailed out using Plan B. Well, there he's talking about Taylor Larimore. Taylor Larimore is the co-author of a book, The Boglehead's Guide to Investing. And Taylor, for years, has been advocating passive investing, 10 years now. And he came out recently and said, if stocks go any lower, he's going to sell everything. So Jack's making a comment here that the problem is people selling out not passive investing. And then his other comment is, and those who have gone 100% because stocks are cheap. That's a reference to Adrian Nenu, another leader, quote unquote, of the Bogleheads board, who is doing the opposite of Taylor. Taylor's saying go to zero, and Adrian is saying go to 100%. Because if stocks were priced reasonably a year ago, which is the fantasy that the efficient market theory people believe in, then they must be really cheap today. If they went down 50%, they must be really cheap. So he's going to 100%. So Taylor and Adrian have opposite emotional reactions to reality, showing its ugly face. It's really a beautiful face, but to passive investors, it's an ugly face. Reality has an ugly face, but to rational investors, reality has a beautiful face. So Jack is sort of defending the old school religion, the old time religion. Nothing wrong with passive investing. Well, there is something wrong with it. What's wrong with it is people can't follow it in the real world. You know, if we were to wait 30 years, it would work. People would get their money back in 30 years. But Taylor Larimore can't wait 30 years. He just celebrated his 85th birthday. 30 years, he's going to be 115. Come on, people. And Adrian Nenu, I don't know how old he is, but he can't wait 30 years either. Sometime in the course of the next 30 years, he's going to want to buy a house, you know, or start a business, or send his kids to college. And he's going to, you know, he can't wait 30 years to get his money back. The idea that all middle-class investors should throw all their money into stocks when it's going to take 30 years to get their money back is insane. It's dangerous. It's irresponsible. And it should stop. There's my truth about stock investing, straight no chaser. That's what I believe. So I think Jack, his quote is a good one. The quote he gives from Grantham is a good one. He's making a good point, but I don't agree. I read in his words a defense of passive investing, and that part I don't agree with. A guy named Bob 90245 quotes from Grantham's criticism of the efficient market theory and Burton Malkiel. Burton Malkiel is the author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street, which advocates passive investing. Famous book that advocates passive investing. And Bob says, I'm not sure what it means to, quote, use market efficiency to explain away bad behavior and bubbles. You have read A Random Walk Down Wall Street? Malkiel reviews in detail the many bad behavior and bubbles from tulip mania in Holland through modern times. Well, I've had that quoted at me before. I've had people tell me, oh, nothing wrong with Burton Malkiel. He talks about bubbles. Well, so what? Does talking about them justify promoting them? If you're arguing for passive investing, you're promoting bubbles. You're not just talking about them. How do you think bubbles form? Bubbles form when people start thinking that valuations don't matter, that they can stick at the same stock allocation when prices get out of control. I'm happy that Malkiel talked about bubbles. That's a good thing. What I'm not so happy about is that he advocated them. Now, he did it, you know, I don't think Malkiel had any idea he was advocating bubbles when he wrote his book in 1974. But he ought to have an idea now if he's followed the literature and he's taken note that, you know, Robert Shiller published research in 1981 showing that valuations affect long-term returns. It's now January of 2009. There's a comment from a guy, DDB. He says, I didn't read the link, but I find it strange that GMO would question an efficient market type strategy. Take a look at the Evergreen Asset Allocation Fund, a fund which is sub-advised by GMO. A fund-of-funds approach where the sub-funds are GMO's own funds. And then he says, from the Evergreen website, and he describes the fund, and he says, basically, it's a moderate allocation fund, but they change their percentage allocation to stocks under varying market conditions. Surely GMO's ability to identify bubbles has greatly benefited investors, right? Let's see. I compared the Evergreen Asset Allocation Fund to a portfolio of 30-30-40 Vanguard Total Stock, Vanguard Total International, Vanguard Total Bond, which is rebalanced annually on the last day of each year. 5-year results through the end of 2008 are as follows. And then he puts forward evidence that the passive approach had better results. So on a 5-year trailing basis, GMO lost to an efficient market portfolio while taking approximately the same amount of risk. In 2008, when it really mattered, they outperformed the static portfolio by 20 basis points. Wow, I sure wish I had put my money with them. Also, they achieved these returns much less tax efficiently, and a typical investor wouldn't come anywhere near qualifying for the iShare class and would instead have had to invest in a much more expensive share class, plus a sales load. What's that they say about people who live in glass houses? My reaction to that comment is a couple. I mean, I have a couple, three reactions. One, I think it's a good comment. I think it's good to, he's criticizing Grantham, but it's not a personal attack. You know, he's criticizing them based on some fund that has not done well for its investors. And, you know, that's a good way to criticize. So I think it's a good post. It's a good post to add to the mix. My second comment is I do think it's defensive. I think Grantham's arguments are just absolutely compelling. And to say that because there's one fund, you know, associated in some way with Grantham, and it doesn't seem to be associated all that close, it's sort of, you know, there's a little bit of overlap there, but I'm sure that Grantham is, Grantham can point to, you know, portfolio recommendations he's given that have performed very well over the past 5 years, a heck of a lot better than passive investing. So because there's one fund out there that he sort of kind of is associated with that didn't do so well, that's a defensive comment. But the real point here is, my third comment is, what DDB is pointing to is, just because you're a rational investor doesn't mean you're going to get great returns. You've got to learn what you're doing, and the key to learning how to do it is to talk about it. And until now, it's been banned. You can't talk about rational investing on that board. So how the heck would DDB or anybody else know how to do it? So maybe Jeremy Grantham could learn something if all the people at that board would put their intellectual energy, you know, to work learning how to time the market instead of these ridiculous arguments about whether you need to or not. It would seem to me we would all learn a whole big bunch more and a whole big bunch less time. And maybe Jeremy Grantham could improve his record. You know, I make this comment from time to time. I say, nobody is an investing expert today because even the Jeremy Granthams of the world, while they understand that valuations affect long-term returns, they understand the need to engage in long-term market timing. They don't know everything. Jeremy Grantham's not God. He's a smart guy, that's all. He's not God. And I'll bet you, DDB and Mel Lindauer and Taylor Larimore and, you know, Bob 90245 and, who's the other guy here? Jack and Petroselli. They all could be helping us learn if they would stop in the name of love before you break my heart. Stop talking about whether we need to time the market and start talking about how to time the market. Do you see the difference? One is destructive. It makes us dumb. Ignoring the need to time the market makes us all dumb. It makes us look like fools. Talking about how to time the market makes us smart. You see the difference? You know, it's the difference between, you know, if you can't hit a baseball, you know, if your kid, he's 7 years old and he goes out for Little League and he swings and misses, you know, and he cries. You know, I've been taking my boys to Little League and you see these boys. I don't mean my boys, but, you know, I don't think I've ever seen my boys cry. I've seen them sad. But I've seen some boys on other teams cry because they strike out. They want to do well. They hear the other players getting applauded. And they stand up there and they have a dream in their head. You know, I'm going to hit it. I'm going to get a hit. You know, mommy and daddy can be proud of me. And they swing and they miss and they strike out. Well, what do? You could say, you know, look, Tommy, you don't have to play baseball anymore. We'll take you home. You don't have to cry. You know, that's denial. That's defensiveness. Baseball's stupid. You know, that's no fun. You don't want to play with those boys. You don't want to play with those boys. They're wasting their time. You could be doing other things. You don't want to be playing baseball. Well, the kid does want to play baseball. If he didn't want to play baseball, he wouldn't be crying about it. He wants to learn. So you don't take him home and quote-unquote protect him. This is what Mel Lindauer said. He had to change the rules for attendance at the Vanguard Diehards annual meeting because he had to quote-unquote protect John Bogle from Rob Bennett, some guy who posts stuff on the internet. He had to protect him. You know, like protecting the little boy who strikes out and you don't want him to cry anymore. You know, and I said this. I said this at the time. I said, Mel's not protecting Bogle. He's dissing him. He's showing him disrespect. You know, the implicit message when you change the rules so that Bogle doesn't have to answer questions he doesn't have answers to is Bogle can't answer the questions. Bogle's pathetic. And I have to step in and protect him. The little boy. I don't want him to cry. Bogle's not a little boy. Bogle's a grown man. Bogle's a giant in this field. Bogle taught me when I didn't know anything. Not that I know so much today. Bogle doesn't need to be protected from Rob Bennett. I don't know what answers Bogle would give to the questions. That I do not know. I don't think there are any good answers. But there's always that chance that he would offer a good answer. And if not, there's certainly a chance he would offer an intelligent answer, something we could work with, something a lot better than what we've heard from Mel Lindauer. I think that much is fair to say on this question. Mel's offered good answers on other questions, but not on this valuation question. So you don't protect your little boy by saying, let's go home and never play baseball again. What do? You say, look, Tommy, I'm sorry. Here's what we're going to do. Starting tomorrow night, after dinner, we're going to go out in the backyard and I'm going to throw you some and you're going to practice your swing. You know? And the first day he's going to strike out at home too. But you give him hints and you give him tips and he works it. And he, you know, 2 weeks later, he's hitting line drives. And that happens. And I've seen it on these little leagues. There's one boy I'm thinking of. I forget his name, but he used to strike out every time up, you know, and it was sad. And he got better. By the end of the year, he was hitting them. And, you know, everybody was cheering him. Everybody was so happy to see that boy get legitimate hits. People weren't, you know, they weren't faking it. I mean, you know, he wasn't smashing him into the outfield. But he could hit the ball on the ground and he could run. And sometimes the fielders would bobble it or they'd be a little slow. And he would get to first base. And he was, you know, and you could look at his face. You know, and he's smiling. He's got this big smile on his face. He's proud. He's proud. I talk about the emotions of investing. This is my niche. I want John Bogle to be proud again. I want Mel Lindauer to be proud again. I want John Graney to be proud again. I want Bill Bernstein to be proud again. I'm sick of all this shame and evasiveness and defensiveness and sadness and sickness. Jeremy Grantham's telling us the way to get back our pride. We don't have to be depressed. We don't have to be incompetent. We don't have to be sad. We don't have to be confused. We don't have to be panicky. We're letting that happen to ourselves. What we need to do is say, stop the nonsense. Let's learn how it works. Let's talk to some people who know what they're talking about. Sounds like this Jeremy Grantham fellow knows what he's talking about, doesn't it? He's not surprised what happened. He knew it was coming. How did he know? How did he get so smart? How did Robert Shiller get so smart? How did Michael Alexander, the author of Stock Cycles, get so smart? How did John Walter Russell get so smart? Let's find out what they know. Let's stop being little babies. I don't call the passive investors little babies because I want to hurt their feelings. I call them little babies because I want them to grow up. I want them to learn how to swing the bat. I want to play with them. I want to go out and play baseball with them. And I can't play if they can't swing the bat. It's no fun. You know, I get into these discussions with the Mel Lindauers of the world, and they throw pitches to me, and I hit line drives against the wall, and I throw pitches to them, and they strike out. It's no fun. I learn when the Mel Lindauers of the world learn how to hit line drives. And he ain't going to learn how to hit line drives if he just keeps putting his fingers in the ears and saying, there were some studies in 1960 that said passive investing might work. It might work. Yeah, well, there have been some studies since then saying it won't work. You know, you're not playing with a plastic bat and ball anymore. You're playing in the Little League, and they have, you know, they're not throwing it hard. This isn't the major leagues, but it's not a plastic bat and ball anymore. It's a genuine baseball and a wooden bat or an aluminum bat. Maybe you're gonna have to learn something beyond what you learned in 1960. Maybe you're gonna have to push yourself a little bit. Please do so. For your own good, for my good, because I want to learn from you, and for the good of everybody in our community, and for the good of investors everywhere, and for the good of John Bogle, who you say you admire and respect, please act like it. Please act like it. Starting today, please. Jeremy Grantham got me fired up. See, that's the way it happens. Somebody talks like that, and it inspires others to do it. And that's what I've always been trying to do. I've been trying to I don't exaggerate what I believe, but I do state it strongly. Straight no chaser. And the idea is to get other people fired up, because I know from reading these boards, there are hundreds of people that know this stuff. And they hang back in the shadows, because they don't want to get smeared. They don't want to get attacked. And somebody's got to start talking the real stuff to change this around. And once you do that, all the ugliness is behind us. We're all friends again. It's fun again. It's fun again when you're trying to win. You know, the boy, after he takes the swings with his dad in the backyard, look, he's still going to strike out. He's still going to, everybody strikes out, but he's not going to cry. You know why? Because when he strikes out the next time, he's not hopeless. He knows he's going to strike out, but he says, I know how to swing the bat. I've hit line drives. I struck out. I am sad about it, but I'll get another swing. I'll get another chance. I'll hit it next time. But when the boy knows in his heart that he knows he's going to strike out, because he knows he doesn't know what he's doing, you've got to take him aside and teach him. It's an unkindness not to do that, to send him up there without giving him any training. And frankly, that's what John Bogle's doing with Mel Lindauer. You know, John Bogle doesn't have to answer questions on a discussion board. He can give a speech, and somebody asks a question or two, and he gives an evasive answer, and he walks away. Mel Lindauer's on a discussion board. He's got people firing at him every day. That's why Mel Lindauer's abusive. Because Bogle can't answer Mel Lindauer's questions. There are no answers. There is no rational argument for sticking with the same stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. There is none. So Mel Lindauer's on the spot. You know, he's been set up, essentially. He's been set up, not just by Bogle, but by all of these people who have advocated passive investing for 30 years now. He's been set up. John Graney's been set up. John Graney, you know, he took his safe withdrawal rate study. He took the methodology from the Trinity study, which was peer-reviewed. That methodology was peer-reviewed. They tested it, and it passed. Shouldn't have passed, but it did, for all the reasons Grantham explains. Academics don't want to admit they got it wrong, and they suck out all the oxygen from the room. They not only don't want to admit they got it wrong, they don't want anybody else to get it right, because if anyone gets it right, it makes them look bad. Now, is that an intellectual problem, or is that an emotional problem? You see, all the investing literature, well, not all, 90% of the investing literature is about the intellectual, what we have to do to invest well. But knowing how it works intellectually doesn't do you any good if you can't hear the truth, if nobody will tell it to you. And nobody's going to tell it to you until we address these emotional problems. Why is it that we don't allow honest posting on investing discussion boards? Why is it that we found errors in the retirement studies, the studies we used to plan our retirements 7 years ago, And not one of them's been corrected in 7 years. Why is that? There's no intellectual reason for that. That's an emotional problem. So we need to start talking about the emotional side of stock investing, which is 70% of what affects your long-term returns. It's one thing to have studies showing you how investing works. That's all nice. I applaud the people who did the studies. I applaud Jeremy Grantham. I applaud Schiller. I applaud Cliff Asness. The whole list. You've heard it. But I don't think they're doing much good if, you know, 90% of the investing population's never heard of them. Doesn't know what they say. 90% of investors think that passive investing works. Take a poll. Can you blame them? Given what we hear, can you blame them? A guy named Ariel, or it could be a woman, I don't know. Ariel, good read. Thanks, Petro. I especially enjoyed the analysis of Japan's situation and the fact that they may have handled things pretty well post-bubble, given the magnitude of the bubble that burst. The fact that their social systems remained largely intact through this magnitude of financial crisis speaks well for the solutions they pursued. It's certainly an interesting comment that people have criticized Japan that their stock market fell a long time ago, and it fell very, very far, and it hasn't come back for a long time. And here Grantham is saying that, you know, maybe they handled things not so poorly, and the guy points out that their social systems have remained largely intact. Are ours going to remain intact? You know, we don't know. We could be going over a waterfall here. I hope not. But there are good signs and bad signs. I'm a reporter. My job is not to shade it. My job is to just report what happens, you know, to the best of my ability. I'm not perfect. But I've seen good signs and I've seen bad signs. I don't know I don't know how it's going to go. Our potential to go forward is just huge. It's just frightening. The opportunity in front of us, if we let people know the realities of stock investing, you know, we enter the golden age of middle-class investing. We restore confidence in the markets. There's no need for any further price drop. We restore consumer confidence. We pull out of the recession, not in a day, but, you know, in a couple years. The opportunity is there. But if we continue this nonsense, yeah, we could go over a cliff. We suffer another 50% price drop, and I think we're going to go over a cliff. That's my personal assessment. And if we don't start to tell people the realities in another 2 years, I think we're going to go over a cliff. I think we have to sober up. That is Rob Bennett's take on it. A guy named Paper 200 says, today's article in the New York Times looks back. I presume market efficiency takes care of errors also. A good read that calls for apology from the administrators. And he's quoting an article called Six Errors on the Path to the Financial Crisis by Alan S. Blinder, and it was published January 24th in the New York Times. And I'll give a quick... Most of the errors that Blinder points at are not... He's not pointing to the efficient market theory as an error, so I feel that the things he's pointing at are rather secondary. He does make a comment at the end that I think is worth repeating. He says, for this litany of errors, many people in authority owe millions of Americans an apology. Richard Clark, former National Security Advisor, set a good example when he told the commission investigating the 9/11 attacks that he wanted victims' families, quote, to know why we failed and what I think we need to do to ensure that nothing like this ever happens again. I'm waiting for similar words from our financial leaders, both public and private. I agree. I wrote a subtitle for the book I'm working on, and I don't think I'm going to use it, but sometimes I wonder if I should go back to it. It was a subtitle I was planning to use for a long time, and then I switched to the one that I plan to use today. But the title sounds a lot like what he's saying here. The subtitle I used to use was Investing for Humans, Why Stocks Let You Down and How to Make Sure It Never Happens Again. And that's what this fellow, Alan Blinder, is saying. He's a professor of economics and public affairs at Princeton and former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. He has advised many Democratic politicians. That's the description of him here at the New York Times. And, you know, he says, he compares it to 9-1-1. I think that's a good comparison. This stock crash came as a shock to most middle-class Americans. They had no idea this was coming. People in the know knew going back, you know, a decade. Robert Shiller told us this was coming in testimony to the Federal Reserve in 1996. So this is hardly a surprise. I took my money out of stocks in 1996. I knew it was coming. Who am I? Some guy who posts on the internet. How did I get so smart? I read Robert Shiller. Duh. John Bogle couldn't have done that. Bill Bernstein couldn't have done that. Scott Burns couldn't have done that. Jonathan Clements couldn't have done that. Mel Lindauer couldn't have done that. John Graney couldn't have done that. Testimonies, it's on the internet. Shiller's, and I've got a link to it at my website. It's publicly available. 1996. But yet many people were shocked. And the guy, you know, Alan Blinder here says, what we should be telling people is what is to know why we failed. We need to know why this happened. It happened because of passive investing, because passive investing is gibberish. We've been giving people bad advice for 30 years. We need to know why we failed and what I think we need to do to ensure that nothing like this ever happens again. That's what people want to know. That's what will restore consumer confidence. Tell them what they need to do so that they know this will never happen again. And the answer is they never, ever, 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 ever again should fall for the idea that it's okay or even, God help us all, a good idea not to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. And then he says, I'm waiting for similar words from our financial leaders, both public and private. Well, I am too. Not because I want to rub their nose in it, make them feel bad. Because the proper thing to do when you hurt people in this way is to make a public apology. You know, Shiller points out in his book that our leaders, not just our financial advisors, but our government leaders should never have allowed prices to get where they got in the late 1990s. It's unconscionable. And it was bipartisan. Clinton was president in the 90s when prices went to insane levels. Bush was president from 2000 to 2008 during the time they remained at insane levels. Bipartisan problem. We need apologies. Not for the purpose of rubbing people's nose in it, but for the purpose of learning where we went wrong and what they're going to do to take things in a different direction in the future. You know, what are you going to change? I think we need to see some articles on the cover of Money Magazine. A great start would be a cover article. John Bogle talks to us and tells us what he got wrong, what mistakes he's made. There was a guy who asked this at the Bogleheads board, and I linked to it at my Today's Passion feature. The guy said, you know, I like what I'm hearing from Bogle and Bernstein, but I'm interested. Do either of them, would they take anything back now that they've seen this stock crash? Have they learned anything? They learned about any mistakes? And I haven't heard that from them. I haven't heard them identify mistakes they've made. They've certainly made them. I can identify them. I wrote articles about the mistakes they made going back years now. I was banned from the discussion board because I pointed out their errors. This was considered a bad thing. I was told that it would hurt their feelings if they knew that they had made errors. It would hurt their feelings. Boo-hoo. So I'd like to hear what Bill Bernstein thinks about the mistakes he's made, and I'd like to hear what John Bogle thinks about the mistakes he's made. And then I'd like them to stand up, you know, brush the hair off their pants, roll up their sleeves, and get back to work developing a model that makes sense. Rational investing. That's when we'll all start to feel good about ourselves again. When instead of dwelling on the past by trying to cover it up, which just perpetuates the bad feeling, it just keeps it going, keeps all the poison going. We admit, the wonder of admitting your mistake is that it's all over. You know, you think it's going to be terrible. You think it's, oh, people are going to laugh at me. People are going to be mad at me. What you find is that most people, if you're a man about it, you know, and you don't, you know, don't offer one of these phony baloney apologies where you have the word sorry in there, but you're not really apologizing for anything you did. Offer a real apology and people will understand. People will understand you make mistakes. They understand you're human. And then start to work on helping them and they'll love you. But we need to turn that corner. I don't think anybody can say I haven't done my part in trying to get that to happen. And I think Jeremy Grantham has done his part. The last comment is by P.K. Crafter. He says, thanks, Petro, but I think Grantham may be off base here. An efficient market is dependent on the dissemination of known information. In this mess, most information was not known to the market. Poor market. I added the poor market part. That's my editorial. In other words, it was not a fair market. Oh, boo-hoo, it wasn't fair. Mommy, that wasn't a plastic ball. I know how to hit a plastic ball, but he was throwing a real baseball. Mommy, can't hit that baseball. The main problem I see with the efficient market theory is no provision for investor speculation, which accounts for bubbles and such. But in this current situation, that is not the problem. The problem is lack of ethics and fairness and failure of the regulators. A market cannot be efficient under those conditions. God help us. You know, that comment turns my stomach. In fairness to P.K. Crafter, he's not the only one putting forward this lame gibberish today. You hear this all the time. The market's not fair. The market's mean to me. The market's mean to me. I invested in the most emotional way possible, and the market took away my money. No fair. Give me my money back, market. Well, guess what? The market doesn't work that way. It's not fair. The market is not fair. That's the whole point. It's the whole point. That's why you want to look at valuations. Valuations tells you how fair the market is at any given time. Today's P10 level, the market's fair. If you invest in stocks today, the probabilities are high that in 10 years, you're going to have a good return on your money. Invest in stocks at the insane prices that applied from 1995 through the first part of 2008. No, the market's not fair. The market's going to take your money and flush it down the toilet. Well, that's the way it works. If you don't like unfair markets, why the heck did you put your money in it? The people you should be mad at are the people who told you to put your money in it. They said it doesn't matter if the market's fair or not. Go with high stock allocation regardless of fairness. I'm saying check it out. When the market turns unfair, lower your stock allocation, guy. Now, he's quite right. An efficient market is dependent on the dissemination of known information. Quite right. That's exactly right. But how does he expect the market how can there be dissemination of known information when honest posting on the numbers we use to plan our retirements is prohibited? At the discussion board, he posts that. P.K. Crafter posts at this board. He's a longtime poster. 1,542 posts at Bogleheads. And he had thousands of posts at Vanguard Diehards. Did he ever once raise his hand and say, I think we ought to lift the ban on honest posting so that the market will have a dissemination of known information? People knew that this market was going to collapse. They weren't allowed to say it. It's not fair. Not fair to anybody. The question is, what did you do about it? Whining that it's not fair doesn't help a soul. You've got to get up off your butt and do something about it. Make it fair. All right. If anyone is offended by the strong emotion, I apologize. I you know, my job is to help my fellow community members. I believe in telling the story straight, because the get-rich-quick impulse is within us all. And if people don't hear the straight story, they're going to hurt themselves. Stock investing is not a joke. It's a serious thing. You know, putting your retirement money at risk is not a joke. And so, you know, I don't think PK Crafter is a bad person. You know, obviously agitated at what he said, but I don't think he's a bad person. I believe that PJ Crafter, in all likelihood, lost a lot of money. He's feeling pain today. But how, you know, my question is, how is PK Crafter ever going to learn the realities if he's not, you know, if honest posting is prohibited? There are people that could help us out of this. There are people that understand the realities. Hundreds of them, and I could give you their names. You can come to my website and you can see comments by them. And they're happy to do it. They're happy to share, no charge. They'll help. They'll answer your questions, PK Crafter. But you're going to have to work up the courage, you know, to stand up to Mel Lindauer, or it's not going to happen. You're going to have to say, Mel, you're out of line, friend. Now, you know, if you want to put it nicely, if you want to say, Mel, I have all the respect in the world for you. You've put up 20,000 posts, and I've learned, and I'm grateful. All that's fine. I've done that. I've said that, and I think it's right to say it. It's all fine and good. But you've got to add those extra words where you say, Mel, there are responsibilities. You're an author of a book, and there are responsibilities that go with that. And one of the responsibilities is to make an effort to stay on top of the literature and to learn about new developments. And when somebody comes to this board and shares things that you don't know and things that you don't understand, you have a responsibility to rein in your emotions and to allow those people to speak and to encourage them to speak. Not just allow, encourage. And PK Crafter, you know, there are all levels of responsibility. Bogle has a high level. Mel Lindauer has less than Bogle, but, you know, more than PK Crafter. PK Crafter has less than Mel Lindauer, but more than, you know, some occasional poster. He's a regular poster. There's all levels of responsibility. But all the levels have broken down. They've all broken down. Or something like this couldn't happen. We never could have gotten to a P10 level of 44 without a massive breakdown in responsibility. You know, our leaders have failed us. That's for sure. Jeremy Grantham says they're incompetent. Well, I'm a little uneasy with the word incompetent. They're highly competent at what they do. But in an overall sense, they're incompetent because they don't understand 70% of what stock investing is, and they're obviously not capable of giving good advice on things they don't understand, things they've never even looked at, things they're afraid to look at. So I don't think I went over the line. I'm trying to make a point, and I'll acknowledge that some of my language in this podcast, not the language so much, but the intensity of emotion is stronger than I usually permit myself. But if it offends you, if it's too much, if it hurts to hear it, all I can say is that I can't take it back, because there might be others on the line. There might be others who need to hear strong language to bring them around. And I have hopes that by delivering things straight with no chaser, that I'll touch somebody, and that person will become an advocate, and that person will stick their neck out a little bit. I'm trying to inspire, courage and love. And so please, if it does make you feel uneasy, you know, please understand the other side of the story is I don't want to say I love PK Crafter exactly, because I don't even, you know, I don't really know the guy. I mean, I can say I feel love for some of my longtime buddies, people I posted with for years, but PK Crafter I don't know well enough. But I can certainly say that I don't want to see any harm come to him, and I don't like to think about the pain he's feeling for the financial losses he suffered. You know, I know how that feels. I mean, I didn't suffer any losses from this, but when I was putting my plan together, I gave a lot of thought to the losses I would suffer if I didn't think it through, and that's why I did the work I did. That's why I did the research I did, so that I wouldn't suffer that kind of pain. And of course, I'm glad. And I'd like to. I believe that PK Crafter is well intentioned, and I believe if he could work up the courage to stand up to Mel, and if Mel could work up the courage to stand up to Mel, you know, Mel's got a good side and a dark side. If Mel's good side could work up the courage to stand up to Mel's dark side, I think Mel would feel a whole lot better about himself. And PK Crafter would feel a whole lot better about himself. And John Bogle would feel a whole lot better about himself. And John Graney would feel a whole lot better about himself. And then Rob Bennett would feel a whole lot better about a whole lot of things. And everybody in the retire early community and everybody in the indexing community would feel a whole lot better about a whole lot of things. And all middle class Americans would feel a whole lot better about a whole lot of things. Because once we get to a point where the people who understand the realities of stock investing feel that they can say the realities and not have their heads ripped off, that's, you know, we're going to learn things that is going to restore our confidence in the markets. And when we restore our confidence in the markets, all of this darkness goes away. We won't get the money back. You know, that's a fantasy. So I'm not going to encourage you in any thoughts along those lines. But you can start investing effectively beginning today. And if you start investing effectively, you're going to make higher returns at lower risk than you've ever dreamed possible following the passive approach. So the future is not nearly as dark and dismal as some people are painting it. But we have to turn that corner. So if I become, you know, I became somewhat emotional. I don't think I went over the line, but I think some emotion's appropriate, because if you show no emotion, if you talk like a robot, you know, what are you? You don't care about your fellow community members. You don't care about if the economy goes over a cliff or not. You don't care about John Bogle, your hero, the guy who set you on the path you're on and led to this amazing learning experience of 7 years. You know, the guy who got you on the path that generated, you know, what is it, 83 podcast, an hour long each or more. You don't care? If you care, a little bit of emotion's going to come through from time to time. But I want people to understand where that's coming from. I love to hear feedback. So if you do have feedback, positive or negative, both have their place. Please click on that contact Rob button on the left side of every page of the site. Good luck with your investing strategies.